You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
Our passage today is from Paul's letter to the Romans, the only one of Paul's authentic letters in the Bible that was not written to either a church that he personally started or to a friend that he knew one-on-one. Romans is basically a cold call, a letter of introduction meant to win over a bunch of people who may or may not have heard some good or not so good things about him. In that way, Romans is a gift to us in that it's the most complete and systematic expression of what Paul believed. And in Romans 8, Paul is in the middle of opening up this great vista of hope for people, a glimpse into the future with a transformed world where both people and creation are made whole. But we're not there yet. In the meantime, there's a lot of longing and yearning going on. Paul specifically uses the imagery of creation groaning in labor pains, waiting for the birth of a renewed creation. We are part of something that has yet to come to fruition, that is in process, that is developing, that is, dare I say it, a process that is evolving. And two things to keep in mind. One, you can count on there being a lot of hard work in moving creation along towards achieving wholeness. And two, just because it's taking a long time doesn't mean that in the big picture, there's not progress. Things are not easy for the followers of Jesus in Rome. So Paul is writing words of encouragement to a people that are wondering if what they've sacrificed and given up is worth it. Paul assures them that before there can be new life, there'll be a whole lot of groaning going on.
Our words of wisdom today are from Romans chapter 8, verse 19 and verses 22 and 23.
For the creation waits with eager longing for the revealing of the children of God.
We know that the whole creation has been groaning in labor pains until now. And not only the creation, but we ourselves, we have the first fruits of the Spirit grown inwardly while we wait for adoption, the redemption of our bodies.
Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
Okay, so there's this group of tourists standing in the museum, marveling at a display of dinosaur bones assembled into a fearsome-looking skeleton. One of them turned and asked a nearby guard, can you tell me how old these dinosaur bones are? And the guard replied, they're 73 million, 4 years, 6 months, and 23 days old. Skeptical, the tourist said, that's an awfully exact number. How do you know their age so precisely? The guard said, well, these bones were 73 million years old when I started working here, and that was 4 years, 6 months, and 23 days ago. All right, so when trying to comprehend the vast stretches of time involved in considering creation and evolution, we are wise to be suspicious of claims that pinpoint certain events with such certainty. Would it surprise you, though, that up until the 1970s, the Bibles placed in nearly every hotel room by the Gideon Society carried a chronology that pinpointed the exact day of creation? How? Courtesy of James Usher, a 17th century Irish bishop, who used careful calculation to pinpoint the exact dates of all the major events in the Bible, including creation, which, according to him, occurred on the 23rd of October in the year 4004 BCE. A Sunday, by the way. Crazy? Evidently not. Today, depending on how the poll is worded, as many as 4 out of 10 Americans actually believe that the Earth is only 6,000 years old, certainly no more than 10,000 years old. And if asked why, few would have an answer beyond, "The Bible tells me so." That's one of the reasons we observe Evolution Sunday at the Fountains. Somebody in the church needs to speak up and say, "Don't go blaming the Bible for your wacky, irrational beliefs." Let me be clear. The biblical stories of creation in no way support what has come to be called in the 21st century creationism and intelligent design. If you actually read the text and know the context in which they were written, it becomes perfectly clear. However, fundamentalists have made a literal six-day creation and 6,000-year-old Earth such a significant article of faith that otherwise smart people can never admit to having any shadow of a doubt about what they know is clearly not true. As our national conversation continues to bog down in the mire of fake news and alternative facts, we need to acknowledge that in a lot of ways, the church is responsible for conditioning people to believe what they know is not true, and to be proud of it. In fact, many churches teach that the more faithfully you believe that Jesus was born of a literal virgin and that Noah's global flood actually occurred, the better a Christian you are. That's why it's all the more important for people who take the Bible seriously to declare our commitment to rational thought and evidence-based reality, especially when you take into consideration that when you ask the 28% of Americans called the nones, that's the N-O-N-E-S, people with no religious preferences, why they left the church, they say it's because the church is judgmental, anti-LGBTQ, and anti-science. We need to not only spread the word that the United Methodist denomination officially endorses evolution, but we also encourage United Methodists to oppose faith-based theories such as creationism or intelligent design in public school science curriculums. But that's silly to even say, right? I mean, that's not really happening, is it? Well, just last week, Arizona's illustrious superintendent of public instruction, Tom Horn, announced that the Arizona Education Department is entering a new partnership with PragerU. PragerU calls itself a pro-American alternative to the dominant left-wing ideology in culture, media, and education, while blatantly pushing inaccurate historical information and perspectives that are demonstrably anti-science. In fact, the presenter on PragerU's videos that promote intelligent design, creationism by any other name, is Stephen Meyer, director of the Discovery Institute, a well-funded action committee created to promote intelligent design. And it's not just Arizona. Science teachers across the country are raising the alarm. PragerU became an official public school vendor last year in New Hampshire, Florida, Texas, Oklahoma, and Montana. Add to that a growing list of private universities like Hillsdale College and Liberty University who not only staunchly teach a six-day creation and 6,000-year-old Earth to their college students, but who teach them to infiltrate our public schools in order to reform them. So, with that kind of competition, it's always good to have someone like Pope Francis on your side. Back in 2014, he issued the statement, "Evolution in nature is not inconsistent with the notion of creation," warning against thinking of God as a magician with a magic wand able to do everything. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. Those who cling to a literal reading of the creation stories practice a very narrow ideology of the Bible that not only shows an unfamiliarity with, but a deep disrespect for both the Bible and science. To deny evolution demands that you reject both reason and experience. Two important guidelines our founder, John Wesley, urged all Methodists to bring to bear in both their faith and life. So, on February 12th, 215 years ago, Charles Darwin, another proponent of reason and experience, was born in England. 50 years later, he published On the Origin of Species, a book that turned the world upside down. In it, he suggested that in any species, if a slight variation enables that individual to survive over another, then that variation is likely to be propagated, to continue to exist, and over an extended period of time, become a distinctive part of that species. It wasn't until over 10 years later, when Darwin published On the Descent of Man, that he specifically addressed the evolution of human beings. And the debate over that claim continues to this day. But even back in 1871, Thomas Nast did a cartoon for Harper's Weekly where the defrauded gorilla stands at the door of the ASPCA complaining that Darwin has insulted him by claiming his previously respectable pedigree. And here we are, over 200 years later, and insecure Christians are still obsessing over the importance of a literal interpretation of creation to be considered acceptable to God. And yet, Colorado United Methodist Reverend Paul Kottke asks us to consider the fact that there is not one of us here who has not received the benefits of medical science. There is not one of us here who has not received the benefits of engineering science as we drive our automobiles, as we live in homes with electricity and heat, as we eat of foods from around the world. For religious leaders to encourage people to deny the possibility of the science of evolution is to encourage them to live in a world in which their faith is disconnected from their lives. And then there's the phenomena of the Spirit's life-giving presence being experienced as much through the wonders of science as through faith. Darwin himself wrote, "There is grandeur in this view of life. Whilst the planet has gone cycling on according to the fixed law of gravity, from so simple a beginning, endless forms, most beautiful and most wonderful, have been and are being evolved." You felt it, haven't you? The wonder and awe that comes when you ponder the miracle of life, the beauty of creation. Through both those intangible feelings of awe over the wonder of nature, to the daily magic of technology that we take for granted. Science is not some evil force that we must reject or deny in order to be an acceptable Christian. In fact, Reverend Kottke goes on to write, "As United Methodists, we are a people who clearly embrace the importance of reason-based faith. We accept that God has given us our minds to be used, and we have seen the benefits of such engagement. Isn't it of interest that the vast majority of hospitals and universities, colleges across this country had their roots within organized religion? When we were exploring colleges with Nat a number of years ago, he and I attended a symposium featuring a panel of admissions officers answering the questions of a couple of hundred parents. That panel made me very proud. Of the five panelists, four were from schools founded by Methodists, the fact of which most people were oblivious to. Southern Methodist University is obvious. Methodist is right there in their name. But most people are unaware that Emory, the University of Denver, and USC were all founded as Methodist schools. And they're just a few of the hundreds of schools that Methodists have started over the last 200 years. Why? To make sure that the next generation had a command of critical thinking and reason, free from the influence of an overbearing church and its doctrines. Look, the Apostle Paul knew nothing of the concept of evolution. But in our passage today, almost 2,000 years ago, he used the metaphor of all the world groaning in labor pains. There was a recognition that creation is not something static, made once in the beginning and done. He was able to say that creation, and we along with it, are changing and growing. Creation is dynamic. We are dynamic, both in physical and spiritual ways. Not only is our identity as human beings that of co-creators, co-householders with the divine, there is within all of us the same energy that is in all of creation. Call it what you will, a life force, the spirit. Go back 14 billion years and we, along with all of creation, find our beginnings as stardust. And yet today, we are living, breathing expressions of a universe that for billions of years has been evolving towards what it is today. The paleontologist and Jesuit priest Teilhard de Chardin suggested that the next phase of evolution is the formation of a genuine global community. The challenge for us in the 21st century is, can we as people of faith be advocates for healthy and whole communities within our diverse world? I don't know about you, but I think it's time for religion to evolve. We need to spend a lot less time protecting static fundamentals and obsolete dogmas, so we can figure out ways to nurture this necessary next stage of our development as a species. Can we, as people of faith, be advocates for healthy, dynamic, and whole communities? Can we break out of our fixation on resentment and divisions and the way things have always been to be a part of the evolution that is so necessary for humanity's future? Have we evolved enough to where we can, unlike the randomness of evolution's natural selection, decide to evolve, decide to change? Primatologist Jane Goodall says, "Change happens by listening and then starting a dialogue with the people who are doing something you don't believe is right." So, change happens. The question is, are we going to abdicate our responsibility as followers of Jesus to make the world a better place and just kind of let things unfold? Or are we going to take Teilhard's advice to be advocates for a healthy, whole, and diverse world? Why do we observe Evolution Sunday every year? So that we, as United Methodists, can not only embrace our heritage of reason and critical thinking, but remind ourselves that change happens. As Jane Goodall says, only when we're in dialogue with those who we don't believe are right. I love the way Pastor Kottke adapts the words of Charles Darwin to ask, can we enable not only the survival, but the thriving of creation, not through the notions of force and domination, but rather can we bring about the survival and thriving of all of creation with the God-given conviction that we are all in this together. Friends, hundreds of congregations across the country and around the world are marking the occasion of Darwin's birthday as a day to reflect on what it means to balance a religious worldview with the knowledge gained from scientific progress. And the question is, can we be intentional about evolving to the next level as a species? Can we help the process in holding community together in life-giving ways to learn and grow and make the world a better place? As followers of Jesus, this is both our challenge and our opportunity to be a part of the evolution of the human spirit that moves us towards a new creation that is groaning in labor, yearning to be born. Be well.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.weputlovefirst.org.